at present. The policy and minimum requirements for teachers, which puts in place minimum standards at the program level for existing education, continuing professional development, and postgraduate teacher education qualifications. It means that there's a standard to which all universities across the country must adhere in relation to program design. An important feature of the new policy is the idea of a knowledge mix. So the kind of knowledges that have to be embedded in teacher education programs, that have to be a characteristic of the programs across the country. So the new policy talks about the foundational learning area, building foundational competences. It talks about the disciplinary content knowledge, a strong focus on building teachers, growing teachers, developing teachers that are strongly based in the discipline in which they have to teach. The policy addresses the issue of pedagogical content knowledge, not just the theory, but the practice as well. This idea of an integrated knowledge mix embedding in teacher education programs in order to produce the kind of teacher that you want for the country. All universities have been recurriculating their programs to align with the new program, to the new policy. There was an expectation that all the old programs had to be phased out and new programs aligned to the new qualifications policy have to be phased in, and I'll give you an update of that on the next slide. The second policy lever is a policy that regulates employment of teachers in the system. It's aligned to the policy and minimum requirements for teacher education qualifications, which was published in the Government Gazette by the DHET. The National Policy on Recognition and Evaluation of Qualifications and Employment in Education was published in the Government Gazette by the Department of Basic Education in 2017. We've obviously worked closely on both these policies and took them through finalization. What the National Policy on Regulation and Evaluation of Qualifications for Employment in Education does is it provides the tool for all the officials in the provincial and district departments to review qualifications that are submitted to them when teachers apply for positions in employment. And it sets the requirements that they need to look for in those qualifications in order for the new teacher to meet the qualification requirements, the employment requirements. The implementation of these policies is overseen by, we put in place a national committee, the National Teacher Education Programs Evaluation Committee. On that committee, the DHET chairs the committee, the DBE is a participant, SAFE is a participant, and the E2BC is a participant. And what that committee does is before the qualifications can be submitted to the Council on Higher Education for accreditation, the qualifications have to be submitted to the National Committee for review for policy compliance. So the committee reviews the qualifications against the minimum requirements. And we have a significant to and fro between universities in relation to ensuring compliance with the policy and minimum requirements. So once this committee has approved the qualification can then be submitted to the Council on Higher Education for accreditation. So it's an additional step for teacher education that's not in place for any of the other qualifications in the country. And it's a step that applies to ensure a level of quality against the standard set in the policy and minimum requirements. That is an update on where we are in relation to the qualifications that universities have recurriculated and that they've gone through in terms of being aligned with the policy and minimum requirements for teacher education qualifications. There are still some universities that are busy recurriculating and getting their qualifications through. By 2019, we will have all new qualifications in place aligned to the policy and minimum requirements. So you can understand this has been a massive undertaking. There's been a huge number of qualifications that have needed to be recurriculated and reviewed. And what you have in front of you are only the initial teacher education qualifications. So there's the continuing professional development ones and there's the postgraduate ones that I haven't included on the slide as well. So the whole gamut of teacher education qualifications have to be recurriculated to be aligned to the new policy. Okay, still focused on the issue of quality. Over the last 2 years, So we have implemented a specific project to strengthen initial teacher education with a specific focus on primary teacher education. In the last portfolio meeting last year, we did signal the impending implementation of this new program. It's now up and running in all of its aspects. It's called the Teaching and Learning Development Capacity Improvement Program. It's a five-year program that will run up to 2019-20, likely to go to 2021 because we did start 1 year late because of delays in funding and in getting the projects up and running. There's a specific theory of change that underpins the new program. The approach is embedded in research, that we need quality research to inform the development work in teacher education, that we need to know what the needs in the system are and how we need to approach them. That based on the research that we do, we need to put in place teaching standards, which we have called knowledge and practice standards, but they're also being called competence standards, which are specific statements of the content that should be embedded in initial teacher education programs. So what we're doing here now is we're going beyond the program level. The policy talks to the program level. We're now working with the universities to work at the curriculum level, which is a deeper level of curriculum standard design. So once we have standards in place, and the standard work is started off with a focus on primary education and a focus on developing standards for mathematics teacher education and languages and literacy teacher education. So when we have the standards in place, the next step is to develop curriculum frameworks. So the new curriculum framework is based on these standards. The comprehensive materials that can be utilized to deliver appropriate curriculum and assessment tools. A range of assessment instruments have already been developed and have been piloted that will be able to assist us to assess teachers that come into initial teacher education programs on entry and on exit so that we can understand whether the standards that we are putting in place have been met at the end of the day. Capacity development opportunities for teacher education academics in order to understand the approach to that kind of work. And we think that if we work with this in a sequenced manner, in a holistic manner, in a coherent manner, that ultimately the end result must be strengthened teacher education programs and better teachers coming out of our university system. There are four project areas, and I'm just going to focus on the ones that are specifically related to the Department of Basic Education and Schooling. There's one project area that focuses on the development of teacher education for the college lecturers, the TVET college lecturers and the community education and training college lecturers, which I won't elaborate on in this meeting. So we started off by looking at starting from the bottom, rather than the traditional approach where we try to start from the top. And the bottom gets neglected. So trying to get the base in place and to get the base and the pipeline right, to work right from the point of ECD, or ECCE as you call it, early childhood care and education. So like the policy and minimum requirements for teacher education qualifications, we've just presented a policy this year on programs leading to qualifications in higher education for educators and practitioners in early childhood care and education. So it's been a neglected area in the university system. Very few programs have been dedicated to developing teachers for the birth to four place. And when I use the word teachers, I use it loosely because we understand that there's much more wider development needs in that space than just the education component, care as well, and the holistic development of small children. So we published that policy in 2017, and now there's advocacy work being undertaken across the provinces in relation to this. But part of this project has been to support 10 universities to come on board and to develop programs for early childhood care and education. And we have these 10 universities working collaboratively rather than individually. So what they're doing is they're developing a joint curriculum framework, and they've developed a joint program that can then be reviewed by each university for its own use and context. But we have a kind of much more common standard across the teacher education space in relation to this. We also have a number of civil society organizations interlinked into this development, because civil society has been an important role player in this space historically, and in fact has carried the responsibility for the space largely. And so we've incorporated them and their involvement into this development so that the knowledge and experience that they've gained can also inform the work that's being done. Teacher education for inclusive teaching is the other project area. So to develop teachers who can be responsive to the range of diverse learning needs of learners in our schools. This project has two legs. It has a leg focused on inclusive education in its general orientation. So all teachers that come out of initial teacher education programs must have received development in the ability to work with curriculum differentiation, in the ability to work with identifying and addressing differentiated learning needs. And this is being taken forward again through the standards approach, developing standards. What does inclusive teaching standards look like? What do curriculum frameworks for inclusive teaching look like? And what do materials that can support teacher education for inclusive teaching look like? And these become embedded in initial teacher education programs. The other leg of this work is a specialized leg. So the recognition that there are learners and there are schools in our country that have highly specialized learning needs, and the need to address that end of the continuum as well. Something I think that's been significantly neglected. So we haven't, for example, been producing teachers for the blind, or teachers for the deaf, or teachers for with learners with neurocognitive difficulties. So the focus on this part of the project is to develop three universities to become centers of specialization for learners with special education needs in three areas. So Wits University is being supported to become a center of specialization for deaf education. The University of Victoria is being supported to become a center of specialization for learners with visual impairments. And the University of Johannesburg is being supported to become a center of specialization for learners with neurocognitive disorders, the whole autism spectrum, and so on. It's a starting point. We do think that if we get these as centers of specialization and we develop them strongly enough, that then these can serve as a seed to develop this kind of competence across the country. Underpinning that project, obviously, is a lot of research. Because we need to build a knowledge base in this area around what are our viable approaches and what do we need to do in the South African context. So there's a research project that's underway on the implementation of CF and a review of deaf education. The third project is the primary teacher education project, the PrimTech project. Here we have all the universities that are involved in primary teacher education working together, organized into a range of working groups. Some working groups focus on language and literacy, and some working groups focus on mathematics. Focus on specific areas within the curriculum for those subjects, so that we can start to talk to the nitty-gritty of what does it mean to teach those areas. So for example, in the mathematics working groups focus on teaching number sense and early algebra. Working groups focus on teaching geometry and measurement. Following the exact same approach that I have specified, the idea that you can develop knowledge and practice standards related to those, that you can inform curriculum frameworks, develop curriculum frameworks based on the knowledge and practice standards, that you can develop teaching materials, teacher education materials that infuse these curriculum frameworks, and we can use these in teacher education programs to train our new teachers. So I'm not going to bother you too much with this. These projects are underway. Significant work has been done. And you can see the progress that's been made in relation to this. So we have been piloting the assessment instruments that we're developing for students coming into the initial teacher education program, with the view that we will also use those assessment instruments when these students progress through the initial teacher education programs. So we can really then generate data on what our initial teacher education programs are or are not doing, and can act on that, rather than on the perception and assumption that we do have a lot of in place at present. Okay, finally, another aspect of this program, so comprehensive, I'm sorry if I'm taking too much time on this, but I think it's important to give you a sense of the work that, that we do to address quality in teacher education. So the idea of teaching practice, strengthening teaching practice, because we think that's an important aspect. And a whole range of role players have pointed to the issue of universities maybe concentrating on developing the knowledge and the theory, but maybe neglecting the teaching practice component. We do think it's much more complicated than that. And teaching practice happens in schools. And we have to build a platform to enable teaching practice to happen effectively, so that we can get teacher graduates coming out who can practice effectively. So we've had a round table earlier in the year where we collected everyone together to understand what does this mean. If we had to put a platform in place that enabled much better practice to happen, what would it look like? And we've come up with this kind of framework that teaching schools and professional practice schools become important elements. We need schools to recognize their role in supporting teaching practice, in supporting teacher education programs. And we need to develop those. We can't just assume that it happens and that people will just be willing to do this. We need an ICT platform that enables students wherever they are across the country to be coherently linked into teacher education programs and to have contact with each other and with mentors wherever they are, or with university lecturers wherever they are, so that they can be supported. And we need a curriculum for teaching practice that actually talks to what should be happening in and during teaching practice, so that you can get the kind of development that we need. These have to be embedded in policy, so we want to develop a policy framework for teaching practice, an implementation protocol, intergovernment implementation protocol, if you like, that designates roles and responsibilities, that identifies who needs to do what in relation, and who needs to take responsibility for what in relation to strengthening teaching practice. We have to fund it appropriately. This is one of the big issues, that work-integrated learning, when it happens outside of an academic context, is an expensive exercise on many levels, not just for the university, but also for the students who need to be traveling to schools and spending time in schools. How do we fund it appropriately? It's not being funded adequately at present. We need HR capacity development around it. So the development of those teachers in the schools that are mentor teachers, that are supervisors, how do they understand their role as mentors and are able to support the teacher education students? So work on this has started. We have a meeting on the 9th and 10th of November where we are going to be developing a deeper description of the teaching schools, professional practice schools approach. And we'll sequentially go through the other aspects of it with the view that in April we have a national Indaba on teaching practice, which puts the teaching practice framework on the table for endorsement by the collective, and we take that through to policy. Okay, so I have to open to this.
Can I just interject here a little bit? Why, before you even give to Mr. Kofi, you have talked of these beautiful projects that you are talking about. We are still going to ask us, and I'm not afraid of it. Talking about these beautiful plans even around teacher practice, just give us an idea. Where are we? You know, they are good plans, but what should we await when, you know? Please, yeah, I'm not opening up anything, but
okay.
Just, yeah, so that we have an idea, really, what is it that you're talking about?
So the teaching practice work has started already. We have a working group in place that's working on the curriculum for teaching practice, working with all the universities. So the idea is that we get a curriculum framework that describes what the initial teacher education students on teaching practice will do in year one, year two, year three, year four of the Bachelor of Education, integrated into the Bachelor of Education program. We have commissioned research on teaching schools and professional practice schools, and we have the research reports that have been finalized. Those research reports are now going to be informing the steps that we must take to implement and to develop the teaching schools and professional practice schools. And that's the meeting on the 9th and 10th of November. We have not started the work on the ICT platform yet, and we haven't started the work on funding and the final policy development yet. We're working up to that. The idea is that in April, when we have the teaching practice in Dava, all those pieces have been connected, and we present a comprehensive overview of what the teaching practice platform looks like. It's important that we work with the system to do this, because if we don't, we don't get buy-in, we don't get support. A number of government departments have to come together in this, including the CETAs, who have to assist us with the work integrated and learning funding components. We do think that if we can take this to some kind of national platform in April and get buy-in on it, we can take it to some kind of policy level early next year as well and start implementation of the range of aspects. So it's not overnight work. It's work that's intense, it's work that's detailed, and it's work that will take a little bit of time. The UNISA Initial Teacher Education Task Team. So in the last committee meeting, the portfolio committee members did raise the issue of UNISA. So remember clearly in my mind, a committee member spoke about checkers, teachers, and so it kind of stuck in my mind, the checkers, teachers, at UNISA. But we have engaged with UNISA right at the Vice Chancellor level and instituted a task team. Led by Professor Michael Samuel, with representation from the CBE, the DHET, and SPACE, and a number of other experts in the teacher education space, including Dr. Nick Taylor from JET, who led the initial teacher education research project. This task team is reviewing the teacher education program at UNISA, the initial teacher education program at UNISA, with the view to putting into understanding where the issues are and what needs to be addressed, and putting in place an action plan for addressing those issues. So the output of this task team will be an action plan, and the DHET will then support you around the implementation of that action plan to strengthen the aspects that need to be strengthened.
Honourable Chairperson, before I speak about this slide, just a little bit also on the teaching practice component and part of it. Teaching practice is happening at the moment, and students are going for their work integrated learning component. It is happening and it's functioning. And the reason why they do that is because policy demands that this happen. And through the minimum requirements of teacher education, minimum standards for teaching practice have been set. So for example, every institution must clearly show to the Department of Higher Education and Basic Education through the Teacher Education Program Evaluation Committee how they select schools for a teaching practice to happen, how they select mentors to oversee the teaching practice component. So those minimum standards are in place, and what the research work needs to do and the platform that needs to be created is to further enable that, to strengthen the delivery of teaching practice within our schools, and to bring coordination especially within the levels of implementation between school, district, and province. To ensure that there's coordination and support, and to clarify the role. Coming to the ICT and initial teacher education, at the beginning of the presentation, we have indicated the importance of preparing teachers with skills for the 21st century, as well as for the fourth industrial revolution that is happening as we are speaking. The Department of Basic Education has developed a professional development framework for digital learning. So that has been developed, it's being implemented as we are speaking. The policy regime in terms of training of teachers also requires that teachers are prepared for this a particular area. To further strengthen this, there's work at the moment happening for the appointment of a South African Research Chair Initiative that will focus on online and digital learning. And what is now important for us is that as this chair is established with this research mandate, that between the Department of Basic Education and that particular function, that there's interaction, because the department has already developed a professional development for framework for digital learning, and to make sure that these two speak to each other. And then to further support this professional development framework through focusing research on digital resources for initial teacher education, how do we drive the active use of these resources, growing the competencies of student teachers. So that level of engagement will then happen through the Department of Basic Education and Higher Education at the appointment of the SARCHI chair, the South African Research Chair Initiative. So this is some of the work that is happening in initial teacher education at the moment to ensure that we work and keep up with the demands of 21st century skills. A second part of this, and it's related, is the issue of the development of professional standards for teachers. The National Development Plan, amongst other things, refers to the professional certification of professional standards. It's also within the SAFE Act. The Integrated Strategic Plan for Teacher Education Development refers as well as to the INCEA. So there's a strong legislative mandate for the development of standards. In his presentation, Dr. Green has already referred to some of these practice standards that is embedded within the curriculum that is being developed through the Teaching, Learning, Development, Capacity Improvement Program. Now, if one then looks at how does this issue of standards fit, and I'm going to try and just bring a little bit of synergy between the existing work that's being done at higher education, the existing work that's being done at SAFE and at the Department of Basic Education through this particular model. SAFE is leading at the moment on the development of professional teaching standards. So that has been established. It's busy working. I will share in a moment about the progress that has been made in that regard. But it's not happening in isolation. This morning in our presentation, we've touched on a number of areas where we spoke about standards. So, for example, the Department of Higher Education has got the minimum requirements for teacher education qualification. That is minimum standard onto which teacher education programs needs to be positioned. Then we have standards, for example, for principalships that the Department of Basic Education has gazetted recently, that looks at performance standards, and you can also link that to the integrated quality management system that is being in place in terms of the evaluation of standards of teachers. So you have performance standards, you have minimum standards for employment, and then you have content and competence standards in terms of in the curriculum, in the subject content that student teachers receive at universities. And then you have professional standards. At the end of 4 years of training at the university, what is it that the profession can expect a student teacher must show and meet? Now this is very important. Once these professional standards are in place, and once SAFE has positioned itself in terms of the role that it needs to play within the sector, this will provide SAFE the scope to start saying to universities, in these areas, your students need to be improved in order to meet the professional standards that we have put in place. Now, what focusing on the specific progress that has been made by states, and I think a number of things have happened, but the most important part that I would like to share is that as we are speaking, SACE is busy doing provincial consultations around 10 professional standards that they are putting out there. I personally attended the Mpumalanga one as well as the Western Cape one, and it was just so encouraging to see how officials, because the consultation is with officials at the district level and the provincial level as well as stakeholders, engage with the standards and the comments that they've made, which has been very good. And then also they engage with teachers, because these professional standards is for teachers. And it is really encouraging to see the inputs that is being made. And I think we can look forward into 2018 to the finalization of these professional standards, and it will really have a significant impact on how basic education is going to be delivered into the future. We're coming to the end of the continuum of a teacher. We started with recruitment, we looked at the quality of teacher education programs, we looked at standards, and now we are coming to the induction program. An induction is in this period between graduation, a newly qualified teacher, stepping into a school for the first time, and then the professional development that will happen after that. So it's sandwiched in the middle of that. And it's a particular important component that I do not think we've emphasized strong enough in our basic education delivery. First of all, induction is the responsibility of the employer. It is what the employer needs to do to ensure this newly qualified teacher is introduced into the teaching environment. And in South Africa in particular, it's even more important given the diverse context in which our teachers are required to teach. And it's quite interesting that in South Africa, our newly qualified teachers are quite often required to go teach in the most difficult areas. We use Funza Lishaka like that, for example, to make sure we have a teacher in front of a classroom in areas where other teachers do not want to go and teach, which make induction even more important for us. So what have we done up to now? What are the progress that we've made? So at the moment, we have an orientation program in place. It's an orientation guideline that provinces, districts, and schools use to orientate the new teacher at the beginning of every year. It looks, for example, at how the relationship with the community happens at a particular school. What is the relationship between the school and the local district office? How does the circuit manager play the role within this? And then it looks more into the school organization. It looks at the policy landscape and it touches, for example, on issues of inclusion and how it happens within the school. If you have a learner with specific disabilities or particular events that happened in their life, how that learner can be supported within the schooling context. So this orientation program looks at that. It's supposed to be a 1 week to a 2 week program, and it's led by the principal and the school management team. Is it enough for an induction program? I don't think so. I think if we look at the professional standards that SACE is developing, we need to go one step further. and to link the teacher licensing issue with induction. And I think what SACE is working on at the moment is to say that once a student, a newly qualified teacher, exits the university, they get provisional registration with SACE. Once they've completed the induction program based on a portfolio of evidence, they then get full registration. We recognize that the mechanics and the frameworks for this will need to be spoken about a lot, and a lot of work needs to happen around this to ensure that there's a strong administrative base underneath this, and that the role of ICT in supporting this will be of great importance. I think one of the main areas why we need an induction program is because provinces approach it differently, and there is a lack of consistency around it. And I think it's important for us that we deal with that. There's also research that says that new teachers are more influenced by their first school setting than by their teacher education pre-service training. And that is quite profound, that statement. And it just places so much emphasis on the work that we need to do in this area, especially given the fact that many of our newly qualified teachers are teaching in areas where experienced teachers do not want to go to. I've spoken about the orientation booklet, the guidelines, and the development of the comprehension induction program. The only thing I want to touch on is just to say that there is a component that is linking with the teaching and learning development capacity improvement program that Dr. Green has presented on, that we will be implementing in 2018. We then come to the end of the presentation, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, and it is for us, we would recommend that the Portfolio Committee discusses the progress report on the implementation of the improved initial teacher education program, and we also invite further inputs and guidance from the members in this regard. Thank you.
Thank you very much to our presenter. Another person, can you move on? Thank you very much to our presenters. Thank you so much. It was a very good presentation, very detailed, though again it was provoking a lot of questions from our side. We are going to open up for the questioning time so that our honourable members, as the both committees, we can be satisfied and know that we understand very well, as to say what is happening now, what is in the pipeline, how do you want to improve the whole issue of the initial teacher training. My co-chair, I think let us open up now for the members to take questions to the department.
Honorable Van der Westhuizen, let me take Honorable Van der Westhuizen, then I'll go to the next. Forgive me if I don't mention your name. I'll start with the member right at the end, and then the member next to him, and I'll come to the front, the member over here, and then the member over there. Remember the sequence, no? Because I will forget. Yes. Honorable Kikana. Oh, and the member, yes. Okay, that's good. I think the Honorable Mototo was your hand up, yes? And Honorable Philip was your hand up? Okay.
You know, Chair, I think it's coming to haunt us that we did not do the introductions at first. We took it for granted, but like myself, I think I know each and every, all the Honorable Members that are here. So I took it for granted that we all know each other, but it's fine. As we speak, we can even introduce ourselves so that by the end of the meeting, at least we know exactly who the Honourable Members are.
Go for it, Honourable Funder.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I'm Andrikus van der Westhuizen from the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education and Training. And I don't know if we need to declare our interests, but I am a former teacher myself, and I've also worked in the WCED's whole school evaluation, the quality management unit. So I have a particular interest. Chair, if I may say, the first thing about the Funza Lushaka bursary scheme, which I think is a wonderful initiative, but I have a few concerns. The first one is the selection process, which seems to be based on a few basic requirements, such as academic requirements and the number of subjects or the particular subjects that the student would like to major in. We all know, and I think we've heard it towards the end of the presentation, that we require extremely scarce skills from our teachers today. They need to manage very difficult situations. They need to communicate with people in ways and means which I believe is quite demanding. Yet in terms of the selection process, there's no interview with people that are already in the profession, etc. It's an online application. I have personal knowledge of a young student who applied and who within 24 hours received an indication, congratulations, a bursary, your application has been approved. And I sincerely believe that we need to put into place better selection criteria where perhaps school principals, teachers, but also then external people would assist. And I'm asking you today, why is that not part of the selection process? It seems to me it's by and large a desktop exercise, even if it comes to the universities for admission requirements. The second one is I'm absolutely thrilled to hear that you are also attending to learners with special needs. And I want to know from you, do we also, when we encourage people to apply for Funza Lushaka bursaries, do we also give people an indication an opportunity to indicate whether they are interested in going into teaching of learners with special needs, and do they perhaps have a particular interest or background in that? I have found in the past that learners with, let's say, deaf parents who are already familiar with sign language and so on, you know, would make excellent, you know, prospective teachers for learners with those special needs. So your response to that, because I don't see on the Funza Lushaka application form that people can indicate such an interest. Then thirdly, Chair, I'm glad that the early childhood care and education is getting special attention, but I'm absolutely horrified by the fact that you are not looking at our TVET colleges and perhaps the revision of our current early childhood development programs on native levels 4 to 6, because I believe that it's not necessary, and I don't think our country can afford, you know, always to drive with a Rolls Royce when a Bucky would be more suitable for that particular need. And I believe in this case that our TVET colleges, with their emphasis on practical training, is perhaps even better suited and better positioned to train early childhood carers than what our universities are. Particularly, Chair, if we think that many of those early childhood educators will not be earning full-time government, not be standing in full-time government positions with all the benefits of being a public service employee. Then fourthly, Chair, in terms of induction. Again, I want to commend the presentation on the emphasis of induction, on induction. And I think that you have also said that you understand that there is a huge difference in how various provinces, you've called it, approach induction. Chair, if
If you go to and work at the head office of a big corporation, there's a HR division with particularly an induction program, and you will probably be attending or even be flown to the head office to attend an induction program for a few days. Yet, I don't think our education departments are geared, and even less so are some of our schools geared to give the necessary support to our new entrants into the profession. And again, I'm grateful to have seen your understanding and recognition of the fact that many of our beginner teachers are placed in very, very difficult circumstances, are being sent to schools where, as you've put it mildly, experienced teachers do not want to go. So induction is extremely important, and I sincerely believe that much more work, but also much more leading or leadership should be displayed in this regard, and that there should be a forced follow-up, a forced support. I believe that education departments and principals should report on what they've done to support new entrants. And then lastly, Chair, my question is just...
May I ask you to hold that last one?
My last one?
So that we give somebody else also...
If I can just ask...
Honourable Member.
What is the current demand and supply position regarding the various subjects? I know Funza Lusaka wants to augment the numbers in those scarce skill subjects. If you could just tell us, to what extent have you already succeeded in getting a better balance of demand and supply?
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. The next member, please don't follow the first member.
Thank you very much, Chair, and greetings to Honourable Members. I'm wondering if you can guide us, Chair, how many questions we should ask, other than being interjected, you know, in the process.
I don't to proceed, Honourable Member. Let's see how we go.
Yeah, but, you know, it's at least if we know, I'm worried about the statement you raised, Chair.
Don't worry,
but firstly, Chair,
continue.
On the centers of specialization, I'm wondering if we can look at other provinces to put this pilot project. I say it is only in Gauteng. VETS, University of Pretoria, and UJ. I think we have some institutions very good in KwaZulu-Natal, DOT and UKZN. If we are afraid of UNIZULU, we can look at those ones. And I think even in other provinces, like in the Western Cape, I think we can put one. So I'm suggesting that we look for other provinces. Secondly, Chair, the department assists students to do, you know, education, to qualify as education through Funza Lushaka. Do we get worried where these students stay in terms of accommodation? Because just yesterday, we lost one student in the University of Zululand. She was doing her last year. She was shot 6 times. She stays out of camp just yesterday. And I know, I'm asking this question because I know that, for example, social development, it's a rule that if they enroll as social workers, the university must provide accommodation for them because they have put funds to do that. So, and on the issue of, you know, the curriculum, Chair, somebody who is doing education and majoring in maths and science in the University of Zululand is doing different modules than somebody who is in the University of West Rand. Yet the employer is the same, both the Department of Education, but the modules cannot be the same. Is there anything that, you know, we can do to actually, you know, measure the curriculum of the institution, like in the basic education? If someone is doing math and science at grade 10, we expect that everything is equal, I mean, it's the same across South Africa. But with higher education, it's a different curriculum. And even the naming of the subjects, I mean the modules, is not the same. I don't want to go to issues of fees, because they are also not the same. And I know that there might be explanations being provided of the geographical, you know, location of the institution. And I don't know whether we are able to check the production that we make as universities versus the demand. If we are producing more, for example, at that particular qualification, because right now we have got a lot of people who have majored in English, I think in life orientation, it's very difficult to absorb those people. Most of them are unemployed because they are saying, no, we don't need them in the schools. And yet we have maybe funded some of these people or some of them through NSFAS, and some of them were funded on self, you know, funding measures. But lastly, Chair, we have trained this teacher, funded this teacher. Is the appointment, you know, the appointment of these teachers done in the correct way? Because I would believe that if we have done, you know, BSc in civil engineering with Honorable Mbatha, when we get recruited by a certain company, we'll all go and undergo an interview. But with the Department of Education, it's different. In some provinces, they do interviews. First-time, you know, graduates, they do interviews. In some provinces, they don't. They are placed by the officials of the department. They don't do the interviews. I remember when we were here in the Western Cape, I discovered that they were saying they were having interviews for a post level one teacher, and I said it's surprising because when I was employed I never undergone an interview, and even today in KwaZulu-Natal there are no interviews. Interviews are only prioritized for management posts only. So it means the in the entrance the induction is going to be affected because a teacher is placed in a school when in fact the school has stayed for 6 months without a teacher. So there is no time for induction except for the person to get in the class and continue with the work. So I wanted to do just those two or three contributions, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Mbatha.
Chair, thank you very much. My worry is the focus. Historically, teacher education was always provided in the colleges, those specified colleges, and it used to be reasonable to the state, and I'm worried about the price that is carried by the universities. And you also say that you are only through the scholarship bursary program, you're only covering 25%. And then for a poor youngster, who covers the rest of the 75%? And what are the implications of covering 25% when we're in a country where first years are intimately facing high dropout as a result of financial difficulties? I'm just curious. Thank you.
Honorable Boto.
Thank you very much to both chairs, and good morning to everybody else. What I would like to know is the universities, are they on par with the content, the teaching of the content or the systems? And I'd like to know what time is spent on teaching the content as opposed to the methodology. Okay. You spoke about the geographical challenges that you have. Have you got a plan and action as to how you're going to address it to ensure that we do get quality teachers teaching in these very, very rural areas? Because the department has spoken previously of incentives with regard to a rural incentive. But many a time, the area that the teacher has to drive to get to that school is just not possible. So how are we going to assist him or her to get to the school? Funza Lushaka, my colleague touched on it. What I would like to know is what is the enrollment through Funza Lushaka for special needs education? And then I'd also like to know what is the percentage increase in the interest of student teachers with regard to mathematics and science subjects. It is absolutely fantastic to see the enrollments that have increased so dramatically since 2008, but I'm still not convinced that the transition from a student to actual teaching is completely successful, because doing oversight, you do see many teachers standing in front of a class not knowing what he or she has to do. And the induction program that you speak of is great, but many of our principals and our SMTs are also not on par, because many of the principals are young. They themselves haven't even gone through an induction program, so we cannot expect them or the team to assist with this. So I'd like more information on the induction program that is going to come from the district level or the provincial level. Then I'd like to know, does the department have a database on the qualifications of the teachers and where they are currently employed across board? And then coming to special needs education, thank you very much that we are putting a bit of focus on special needs. It's a passion with me. I come from a special needs background, but the universities that you have targeted are all up in the north. We have many, many schools throughout the nine provinces. So how are we going to address special needs education down in the south? No university in the Free State has been targeted. No university down in the Western Cape has been targeted. Nothing in Mpumalanga. Okay, Northwest and Mpumalanga are close to UJ, WITS, and the University of Pretoria, but it's not going to address the problems that we currently have with special needs. There are close on 600,000 special need learners that don't have access to school because we lack educators. So we need to find another way of addressing this problem. Could you please give me more background as to the review you're doing on deaf education? And what are you going to do for the blind? I mean, these learners have no cognitive disabilities, but they are being left to their own devices. And we have seen what the pass rate is. There are many of these schools where the pass rate is zero because they do not have trained educators. There is no way you can put a teacher in front of a class and expect her to teach sign language if he or she hasn't been given the appropriate training. ICT, great, wonderful. But how many teachers have been trained in this field? And what is the budget that has been put aside for laptops, internet connection, etc.? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Ngoni.
Chairperson, thank you and welcome again, Chairperson. Thank you very much to see you again. I've been missing you dearly. And morning, ladies and gentlemen. You know, I laughed. Chairperson, I was laughing here. Maybe I wasn't disturbing you. You know, when one member was asking, why don't we have interviews? And one member just whispered upon me and said, hey, how can we have interviews when we have a shortage of teachers? But it looks like we have only screening. But I'm happy that you have the booklet on the orientation for induction of teachers. That you said you'll introduce and will be on the WhatsApp website. But what I want to know is, how will you ensure that all teachers or those responsible go through that booklet? I think it addresses my question on the issues of discipline. You know, most discipline is at schools, on the issues of the way teachers have to conduct a curriculum deliveries in school. On the issue of demand and supply, you have indicated there are many learners who are applying.
or students are applying. But the awards that are given are too little. Do we have any plan? Because we will keep on going and make this advocacy campaign, only to find that now we are having an oversupply than we actually need. Universities mostly, they deal with the research. They like the research than content. How do we ensure that content to the teachers is more than research, so that when they get into schools, they deal with the content? Did you do any comparative studies with mostly the African countries, you know, which have the similar challenges with us here? To check why in the initial teaching studies these teachers become better than we are. Because these chairpersons, you will see that most of the SGPs now, they will prefer foreign nationals than ourselves. Sometimes they will even prefer unqualified teachers than those who are coming from universities, those similar to those. Why is that the case with us? Lastly, the control, you said that if it happens that the students are unable to meet certain requirements of the Funza Lushaka students, you will have to recollect, make them pay. What is the control of these defaulters, those who are unable to pay? Chairperson, thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Basson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will be very short because my colleagues have covered me a lot. Thank you, professors, doctors, Mr. Gautier, for your presentation. The program is so good, but mine is just like the former colleague, is the way you have spread your wings in order to reach the other provinces. I'm concerned about your centralization of choosing the universities, more special on inclusive education. But I wanted also to know on that point, the inclusivity of the classes team. Do you have on those, is it page 20 or 22, the class team that is doing the work, do you have representatives of the inclusive education? Do you have a representative of all other languages? Do you have representative of other universities? Hence, I see that things are happening with the UJ, UP, and all those places. Another point is, as you are planning, are you going also to take care of when students, when they are placed in these universities, on type of tutors that are tutoring them? Are those tutors content knowledge tutors, or are the tutors that they know the real situation at school? Because sometimes the adjustment of educators on the real situation is caused by the type of tutors that have trained the teachers. You have 23 providers of education. Have you visited those institutions to know the tutors better that are doing them?
on placement, you say shape of what? Yeah, on shape. You have put it well on how are you going, you are going to address the shape part of it. But let's come now to reality. You have shaped them correctly. Are they going to be placed correctly on the ground? On that point that other speakers have mentioned, what about also including a criteria when recruiting teachers, just like doctors, saying that for the first 3 years or 2 years, you are going to teach on rural education and in rural areas, because we train these students or candidates, but at the end, they don't want to go and teach in rural areas, except the conditions that the other speaker has said, accommodation and all those. But let us make it, can't we make it a criteria that after completing your degree, you must first, it's compulsory to teach at the rural school in order to close that gap. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Kosa.
Thank you, Chair, and welcome, Chairperson Gin. You are warmly welcome back. Chair, my colleagues have just recommended that with regard to university-based special centers, we need to spread. They did not ask a question. I'm coming up with a question as to what are the reasons that are making you to have centralized those universities in Gauteng? Maybe you've got reasons that we do not know. Other than that, yes, I agree with the recommendation, but what are the reasons? You have got three universities in one small, highly populated province, and got nothing in where you have got enough space. What can be the reason? Secondly, Chair, no, I will welcome that. But the other issue I wanted to raise, Chair, is with regard the number of unplaced graduates. Eastern Cape has only placed 20%. Is there a reason? But I cannot ask this. We have been to Eastern Cape. There is shortages of teachers. What can be the reason that they've only placed 20% since the inception of this issue? The other issue is the general challenge that the members have spoken to, where in Funza Lushaka graduates who after placement move from rural to urban area. What are the plans in place to ensure that we deal with this challenge? Have you investigated the causes of these? And what are the possible solutions to this problem? Lastly, it's on presentation you said something about UNIS or distance learning. You know, teaching is very difficult if one is not exposed to a classroom. How often are students afforded time to interact with learners? I'm referring to teaching practice, because it is very serious that they must do teaching practice. And other than when they finish with UNISA, they go to Checkers work for 8 years, and after 8 years you expect them to go and teach. They cannot do that. Thank you very much.
Okay, Kana, on the mic for him, please.
Thanks, Chair. My questions are similar to some that have been asked, but I'm trying to ask them from a different angle, a different perspective. The first one is like the one the gentleman I just asked. You know, I like quoting this example of nurses, that nurses, we're saying they must go to university for training, we close nurses colleges. Now, actually, we've seen the prudence of opening those nursing colleges, because there they were next to their practical areas, which is the wards. They'll go to college for 1 hour, walk over to the ward for the whole day. And we actually produce a very high standard level of nurses, because when they go overseas, like London, Scotland, Saudi Arabia, they were highly respected nurses from South Africa, because they actually are trained on the job, you know, on the job training. Now, this has happened too, and they produce their own nurses, because a nurse who studied with UNISA, BQRI, should ultimately be appointed as a teacher, as a tutor at the college. So it was nice that they generated their own tutor within the system. Now we went on oversight to Limpopo, there was Mokopane College, an old prestigious college in what was called Potrites Rest of Pipiras. Today it is there, closed. It was a teacher's college with boarding and lodging facilities, and actually a fully fledged college with boarding facilities. Now it has been a white elephant for about 8 years now. And when we ask, why don't you give it to TVET, because it is right in the township, we're told, no, it belongs to basic education. I can quote many of these type of colleges. My worry is, why when we run short of facilities for TVET and we need accommodation, and accommodation is there and wasted. So what is the plan? Because like people have said here, I don't think all teachers must be trained at the universities, because you're overloading universities. These colleges can be reopened. That is a direct suggestion, like nursing colleges has been. That's the first issue. The second issue is about math, science, I mean hard sciences, and accountancy, what you call scarce, what ultimately produces scarce skills. I'm happy that you really seem to be making an effort to cover these scarce skills. But the point is impact assessment. Are you able to do any impact assessment? Because at TVET colleges, we are told a lot of students are failing in a lot of subjects there just because they are very weak from basic education with math and science subjects. So how long is this going to take? Because the way the presentation went, you could imagine we have sorted out everything as regards this subject in terms of teaching. But in practice, when you go to these TVET colleges, they always complain about how weak students are in math and science. So I'm questioning impact assessment. Have you been able to do any impact assessment? The last question, sir, the electronic learning. We are told that the whole world, developed world actually, the G7 if you like, are moving towards e-learning because they think it saves them money on accommodation, on classes, on books, and so many other things, and they spend a lot of money in education, actually in employing teachers, and that the whole world is moving in that direction of electronic learning. I know you spoke about digital and online learning, but indeed, how, with the problems of providing the equipment like laptops, desktops, how far are we, and are we taking this matter as actually where the world is moving towards education? In fact, just lastly, we are told that one university in America is enrolling 100,000 students a year simply because they are using electronic learning. You can imagine if you can train per tertiary institution 100 students, I'm sure South Africa will be a first world country, not that. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Mokoto, and then followed by Honourable Kalia.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, I want to add my 2 cents to welcome you. Yes, we're glad to see you around and operating. And you know, the workload has been reduced.
We knew it, you were coming to that thing.
We prayed. Thank you very much for the presentation, Dr. Green and Gigi. I just want to appreciate some of the, you know, progress that has been made with regard to addressing some of the challenges that have been identified within the system. And we really appreciate the effort that has been put in place to make sure that gradually we move from those challenges, particularly the issue of the increasing the number of student teachers, you know, like it has been such a huge growth, but I still believe that the issue of quantity, since it is, you know, being addressed quite quickly, it must be meshed with the issue of quality, you know, improving the quality of that quantity. I also liked the fact that we have also placed our focus on the issues of ICT. And I hope that it will link nicely with that unit within the Department of Basic Education, of Rural Education, making sure that, you know, distance is not a barrier to education through ICT and e-learning. I have also appreciated the fact that you have looked at, you know, strengthening the approach on primary education at early childhood, and it's so commendable. I just hope that, you know, we accelerate that work, because the challenge is huge. The NDP targets are fast. You know, we are about to get to the deadline. Chairperson, one of the questions that I wanted to raise is the issue of the morale of the teachers, because we know that these days, even though that we get the report that there has been an improvement in registration of new students, teachers, we know that within the communities, a lot of teachers resign every day. Even if they are not resigning, they are saying that I wish I get a job somewhere. I wish I get a tender. So how do we intend to improve the morale and to make the profession, you know, a lucrative profession? Because, like, if a person says that they are going to study accounting, they know that with accounting they can be there for the rest of their life, and they will rake the money and can even go from one place to the other. So there are so many career options. And I still believe that it is the same with education, because of late we've seen a lot of people wanting to be teachers, and there are new businesses for education that are emerging. So how do we go forward to improve the status of the profession, to make it very attractive? And then also, like, when you look at other professions like the police service, there are ranks. Like you'll find that there is a constable, there is a colonel, lieutenant. I don't know how they order, you know, because I've never been in the, you know, in the forces. But there are different ranks. And then even with teaching, isn't it possible that the teachers can, you know, come up, we can come up with a way in which we recognize the, you know, and appreciate the input that the teachers are making by recognizing what they are specializing in and what they are doing, so that they are able to even say, I'm a, you know, specialist, you know, career counselor or whatever. And even the issue of money. The other point that I wanted to raise, Chairperson, is on the issue of Phundza Lushaka. I like the new direction that is being taken, is being planned. But every time when you talk about Phundza Lushaka graduates, people will tell you that you know, they don't know this and that. But they train together with other teachers that are not funded. They go to the same classroom, lecture halls. They are taught by the same lecturers. It's just that these ones, they are funded through Phundza Lushaka. But when you go to a school, they say that they are underperforming. What are the loopholes there in you know, that are affecting the Phundza Lushaka graduates? Because I believe that even if you are new, you can still bring, you know, value into the system because there are so many opportunities for you to learn and even to bring innovation and new skills into the system. So how in the research that we are conducting, Gerard, what have we identified as a stumbling block for those students? The other point, Chairperson, is the issue of you know, digitalization. We talked about it. How do we want to see it incorporated? Because we don't talk about it. We still talk about maths, language and literacy. We don't talk about how we are going to incorporate the ICT within our curriculum, and then making sure that the teachers, they learn it there, they don't have to meet it at the school level. I think my colleagues, they have already taken a lot of areas. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Kilian. Thank you, Chairperson. Although it's not our Chairperson, I want to say from our side as well, it's so good to see you back. We hope that you will recover 100%, and it's good to see that your commitment is of such a nature that, notwithstanding the restrictions on your neck, you are around here and you want to make a difference. Chairperson, I first of all wanted to just apologize. I just had a medical appointment which made me late. Secondly, I just want to first of all say that it's good to see that there's a plan to improve quality and to improve throughput of teachers so that we can fill the many vacancies. Just one comment that I want to make, and that is from our perspective, from higher education, Chairperson, it is critical that our teachers must be trained in such a way that we can reduce the expenses at tertiary level, which is very expensive. So we should rather invest more in quality teacher training so that we know that the school leavers, when they leave school, they can go and actually enter any course at university. Obviously, they will have their interests, etc. And that brings me to the point, Chairperson, that we really need to understand what we do to ensure that we have more maths and science teachers. Is there any special provision? Is there any additional sort of lucrative attraction that they have? Because unless we stem the tide of poor performance in those fields, we will not be able to fulfill the human development needs of the country. So what are we doing to do that? Secondly, Chairperson, I am a little concerned about the induction program. It's good that there is an induction program, but to what extent are we ensuring that especially those learners, those young professionals who go through university education to become teachers, that they actually have, during their training, exposure to practicals? Why is it not a requirement that they should actually teach or be exposed as a student teacher for the first year, X number of weeks, second year, X number of weeks, etc.? Just to make sure that you ease them into the practical classroom experience. And then lastly, Jay, if we hear what some of the unions are saying about the conditions and why teachers are leaving the profession, whereas we are now today focusing on the input side, what are we doing to ensure the retention of good teachers? Is there any system that the department is developing? Because if teachers are leaving classrooms because they have to teach 100 students at a time, but we're saying, and I think in some of the populous provinces, we look at placement of 20% in the Eastern Cape. Where's the problem? Is there enough coordination between the department nationally and provincial departments, or is there a weakness that we should be aware of? Is it necessary to perhaps have some other special provision for people teaching in rural areas where, you know, or specific schools in informal settlements where the number of learners are higher than other areas? What do we do? Because we have to look at the system from a little bit of a step one step back and look at the system and say, where are the challenges? And what do we do about that? So that we don't just focus on this without looking at the rest. I would also be interested, Chairperson, to understand of the number of students who register, what is the percentage of dropout out of teacher training? Because that will also indicate where we are going, perhaps, where we are going wrong. That would be very interesting. And I note that there's special mention of ECD. We all know that that is a very necessary area. We can expand that to have children on an equal footing when they start with grade one. That would really be wonderful for the country going forward. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Turk.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I also want to welcome my comrade and my colleague and Honourable Chairperson Gina back to this to Parliament. I want to sincerely apologise that I have not visited you since we're from the same province, and I have not visited you. I actually felt very embarrassed when I saw you in the lift this morning. Sorry, but welcome that you. I'm happy that you are back. I just want to comment on one thing, which is the induction. The colleague there raised induction of teachers, recruitment, interviewing, and induction. The induction of teachers, and how well prepared new teachers are to actually go into the proper profession, and the morale that goes with it. I received a message from a teacher last night from Johannesburg, a teacher from Johannesburg teaching in Johannesburg. She does not know that I'm on the phone. They are newly appointed on the Portfolio Committee of Education. But she sent me a message, and
And it speaks to the induction of teachers. Actually, I just want to read it. The 22-year-old teacher, just from university, first year teaching, she sent me this message because she asked me about Parliament. She sent me this message. I just want to read it. I want to quote. I want to comment on the fact that the whole education system is failing the teachers and the students in government schools. For some odd reason, I find myself doing the job of a secretary, not a teacher. Government has teachers doing piles and piles of paperwork that district forces upon us. And if you go to district office, they don't even look through all the stupid paperwork. I'm busy doing an admin job. I have no time to teach. I have to rush through the work with the children because it has to be in their books. Then I must rush to do paperwork by my desk. There is no teaching happening in government schools. It's scary. Teachers are instead walking around frustrated with all the paperwork they must do. You guys sit in Parliament and dictate without having sat in the 21st century classroom. Now here's a teacher, 22-year-old teacher from university, first time teaching in a government school. I do not know what induction she went through, but writing to me and saying how frustrated they are, that they are finding they don't have time to teach kids because they have to go through piles and piles of work. They are doing the job of secretaries, they are doing admin work. So what kind of education are we giving kids if the morale of teachers are like that? And I'm very sure that by every year she'll be leaving teaching and she'll be doing something else. Now, this is a teacher, the experience of a first-year teacher from the university. Thank you very much.
Thank you, honorable member. Co-chair? Thank you very much, Chairperson. Honorable members, our colleagues from the department, can I just comment on what Honorable Dex has read to us? For me, what I can conclude from what we have heard now from the teacher, young teacher in Gauteng, it talks directly to what we are here for today. It talks to the issue of initial teacher training, where the teachers are trained, what is expected of a teacher, because really, for a teacher to complain to be doing paperwork, that is part of a teaching. You have to teach, you have to record, so that the whole process of teaching, we are saying we are teaching. It's not about standing in front of the class and talking and then we leave. And you say there is an administrator will come in. For me, it talks directly to what we are here today. How are the programs offered at the institutions of higher learning? What is it that we train our teachers? Because the fact of the matter with people, these are the complaints that you are getting later and later, is to say, paperwork and so forth. Yes, I fully agree there might be things where teachers need to complain, but in other instances, it talks to directly how these teachers were initiated to teach. Are we talking to the issues, to the real issues that we expect teachers to do when they get into the classroom? What is teaching? What is assessment? How do we combine all the things to say we are teaching? This is the product we want to get out to. So I think it was a very good example that Honorable Dex has come up with. Secondly, what I want to talk to Chairperson, Dr. Green, in your presentation you talked to the issue of the district. I want Dr. Green's attention. Okay. There was a part where you said the district officers will review the qualifications when these teachers come. I did not understand what you are saying. What is the reviewal of the qualification? Because this teacher would have qualified from the institution that has been accredited, you know, what is the role of the district there? What are they reviewing actually? So that we don't see confusion now where to say I'm coming with my certificate and the district director will say no. I don't consider, what is it exactly that you're talking about when you said that? Secondly, maybe even to you, Dr. Curran, coming from the Department of Higher Education and Training, what is it that the TVET colleges are offering when it comes to teaching? We never make mention of anything when it comes to teaching, but when you go out there, there is a qualification that our learners, our students are getting from the TVET colleges on teaching. And it's a problem. I will make an example from KZN.
there's been a number of those learners who have qualified from CVET College. When they come to DBETB, we'll say, we don't know this qualification. It's not recognized, but with higher education, we are busy producing those qualifications. What are they? What is your plan? Where are we getting to? Because we cannot waste our... It's our taxpayers' money paying for these learners at the CVET colleges, and we are wasting their time with a qualification that is not recognized yet. Anyway, if you can talk to that, I will be very happy. Again, maybe Dr. all of us here in this, in under the room, but Dr. Green, together with the leadership today in higher, in basic education, really, when we talked on of the issue of distant learning and initial teacher training, it's not for the first time we asked this. Dr. Green have been, we kept on referring to the previous meetings that we have, with specifically with the qualification that we get from UNISA. Even now, as a committee, we are still not satisfied. Thank you very much that there is something that you have started to do. But the question we're asking even last day was to say, as we are discussing this, we're continuing to produce. We're going to get another group coming up out this year. I don't know, as to say, the task team that you have started, how long would it take to review whatever is produced by UNISA. For me, it says even on the years to come, we're still going to get these products from UNISA, of which everyone is complaining. Was it a good thing anyway to say we can initiate the teacher training the way UNISA is doing, you know? When they have to apply, the way accredited, you know, was that good? What is it that you can say to us? I'm not saying we must preempt and say, what is that committee going to come up with? But the fact of the matter, that is what we have. You get even those, when you talk of standards of monitoring, assessing, and evaluating those teachers, even those people who are employed, most of them who UNISA just take old people who have, it's good that you bring back the skills of those teachers. But those are old mamas and babas who are tired, who will go just for that week to monitor them when they do that practice teaching for 1 week. I'm telling you, I was very disappointed during this leave of mine. I met one who was rushing to check us, saying, I'm supposed to be evaluating this learner. She did not come up with checkers. I'm going to take it. You know, then you begin to say, is that the kind of a teacher that you want him or her to come and join the system? There's so much that we need to do, and my plea is that can you speed up that process? It can't be. Lastly, I know I can say maybe I'm still fresh, I've got a lot to say, but let me come to this. When it comes to the issue of initial teacher training again, there are things that we are prioritizing as the country. The issue of ECD, we've talked to the 2 years of ECD. ECD, where does it fall? Social development. I think these three departments, basic education, social development, and higher education and training, we need to get, as to say, what is your plan when it comes to the issues of training those practitioners for ECD? We're talking to the issues of 2 years. Where are we? Are we moving? Should we go out talking on one and the same thing, but we see that there is no move? Can we just get that indication? Where are we moving to? We're talking on the issue of introduction of African languages at schools, but we're not getting those programs from any institution where we are training and preparing these teachers to be able to take up with such things. What are we saying? We're talking of African social cohesion. We're talking of introducing these African languages to here. You know, where are we when it comes to that? So that we don't speak these things, but there's no program or no plan to implement such. There are good programs, as I've said. That is why I even intervened that time. As I say, sometimes we talk of these programs, they're nice and good, but if we don't see them coming to practicality, it's no use to us. So, yeah, let me stop there, Chairperson, for now.
I was about to say your time is expired. thank you very much, honourable members, for your contribution. Just a few things from my side. We must welcome your initiatives around the ECD program, and indeed the specialist, the inclusive one. But on the inclusive one, I want to suggest, you know, honourable Kekana that is sitting there, have been to university, deprived of a person that could train him for his that takes into consideration the problems that he has. I was hoping he was going to talk about that same university that he mentioned and the difficulties that are still at those universities, not having the kind of lecturers that are trained to do that. And that currently, I know the students have organized themselves around that aspect, that they do not have the necessary qualified people that can do that. And I want to suggest there's another member here, Honorable Wilma Nivod-Drushan. She came to my office and produced to me the outcome of countrywide of learners and the fact that the rate has dropped, the pass rate has dropped amongst them. And those are learners she organized those people that are in the deaf community because she herself does sign language. They have a slogan that says, you can't do anything without them, nothing without us, nothing for us without us. And I really want to encourage you to involve Honorable Kikana, Honorable Nivod, that work in that area, because we think that it can't be correct that you do something for some people and you do not involve the very people that it's meant for, and because of the skills that they do have in that area, they would be able to tell you. So from higher education, I agree, most of the oversight visitors we've had, we are lacking very much still in this area when it comes to the different needs. I support the co-chair on the ECD. I do think that we have to give a little bit of caution in this area. The difficulty in the ECD area is, as long as people out there think that we will look after young children as opposed to teaching. So my mother don't have enough money, just going to stay there by the auntie at the back in the room, and then they have organized a little crèche there. In my own constituency, many of them are illegal, and we're working on that thing to get them, because we're working with a CETA to give them internship also. And so we think that there's a little bit more that needs to be done in this area. I support the fact that this thing of social development is not a... This thing can't be, it really doesn't sound very well where they are located. So I agree on the ECD. I think there's a little bit more that needs to be done in that area. My other question is, a lot of programs that you said that you're going to do, and we can see the direction that you're moving into. DG, and the other DGs that's not here. Do we have funds for all of these programs? Because if it's just going to be programs that we are promising and there's no funding that has been allocated for that, then that's our business to find out whether indeed any of these programs will see the light of day co-chair, and that these things are not promises only. I want to add what the other members have said and ask, what yardstick are you using? For those people that you take in, maybe you can just explain to us the little yardstick that you're using. In higher education, there's an allocation for money towards foundation programs, and those foundation programs is because of the lack of what they don't have that they did not get in basic education. Now, of course, we would want to know, with this entire program, at what point will that foundation program not be needed in higher education? Because it speaks to, in basic education, a number of things has not been realized. How do you bridge these two together because obviously the country, for how many years will the country have to deal with that situation? I also want to find out, are you benchmarking this program against any other international program? And if so, with whom are you benchmarking it? The Higher Education and Training Committee has had a report from the Human Sciences Research Council that speaks to the labor market intelligence. All of this, how are they speaking to the issues that are raised in the labor market intelligence, and they speak to, amongst others, one of the disturbing things that came out of the report are the inequities that we are having as it relates to both race and also the quality, the school quality. They talk about the jobs, on the job training that Honorable Kikana has referred to. And amongst many other things, the question is, how are you alive, and are you in the unit that I think Higher Education has put together to bring this program together with that also. I want to ask that, and I might not have heard that, for this entire program to work, for on-the-job training to work, and many other things to work, requires a particular leadership. Is there a particular leadership program as it relates to principals who would assist what you are doing, because they have to ensure the qualitative nature that comes out of their school, their Tivet College, or any other institution? And lastly, I want to ask, maybe when you come before us again, will it not be possible to say to us, remember the NDP says to us that we have targets that are set. Will it not help when you appear before us again, instead of just telling us these are the programs and this is what we are working towards and what we would want to have, to say to us that we have now been able to reach the following targets? Because we would also want to know what are the challenges that are experienced to ensure that these targets are met and that these programs can be implemented. And that which we are talking about that is still out there that we are experiencing, are either being, you know, they either have the following challenges, or you are, you know, you have been able to overcome many of them. So I want to suggest, co-chair, that maybe at the next meeting, if we can have a progress report that speaks to this is what you have said to us, and these are in 2017 we would have wanted to achieve, we have not, and in 2018 if we take the 5 years of this parliament as a start to see how far. But then, of course, as I said, the NDP does have its targets, and it's better to stick to those targets. I know it's many questions that have been asked, lots of them, but of course it's a joint meeting, so of course it's extra questions that are there. I would, co-chair, ask the DG to guide us, and I'm sure that they would have worked out who's going to answer what. But I'm going to ask you to answer those questions. Honourable members, are you fine and you don't need a body break?
Fine.
You are fine. Wonderful. I have asked. May I ask you to respond?
Honourable Chairpersons and Honourable Members, thank you very much. I'm not complaining. We've got an average of 6 questions from members.
Some have asked up to 11 questions. So we'll do our best. One member asked one, and but it's an average of about 6 out of 13 members who asked questions. So we've distributed the questions amongst ourselves.
Thank you for that math exercise.
I think that's what you're paid for, Chair, to answer all these questions. Let me start with the last comments and questions raised, Honourable Chairs and Honourable Members. Honourable Co-Chair, I agree with you that over and above programs only, we'll definitely make sure that we also reflect on the progress that you are making in meeting targets set by the National Development Plan, by Sustainable Development Goal 4, and even Continental Education Strategy 2016 towards 2025. So we'll have to reflect on all of those goals, you know, the progress that you are making, and even challenges, because you'd definitely be interested in challenges as well. The on-the-job training, what we have started doing in basic education in particular, which, agreeing with the observation made by honorable members that historically induction was overlooked, and that's why it features quite prominently in our presentation now, because we've realized the challenges that have come to haunt us because of overlooking induction. But in the last 2 to 3 years, we've intensified training your school management teams on inductions. In my visit to the 9 provinces, I've been able to walk through training programs that are carried out for school management teams in the 9 provinces of the country. It's just the beginning. Our intention is to intensify that, because your best capacity building all over the world must be resident in every institution. The other organs from outside institutions must just come in to support the existing capacity building that happens within an institution. Induction, for just reminding you, honorable members, I know that you are teachers, many of you are here. The best and most effective induction is the one that's carried out by the school management team, which happens on an ongoing basis from heads of departments, etc. Chair, I should also indicate that, as I did intimate in my opening remark, that we are working quite closely with higher education and training, acknowledging that we are serving one education and training system. We even have joint meetings of what we call HEDCOM. HEDCOM is a committee of provincial heads and national heads of education. We meet regularly, and these issues feature in those meetings where we plan together, where we evaluate even the progress that we are making. And evidence in that regard, unlike with other committees, Chair, which you'll attest, we've come with one presentation, and the two colleagues shared that presentation. It's not only cosmetic. It happens even beyond these four walls. And I've said that even meetings of HEDCOM that we hold together. Maybe I know that you've got a very extensive program, but meetings of this nature would be highly appreciated. Even, you know, to address instances of where there might be gaps somewhere. And some might be perceived gaps. Some might purely be alleged gaps, which do not exist in any way. But meetings of this nature are extremely appreciated. The Honorable Co-Chair asked whether there are funds I would never, money is never enough. I've never heard anyone saying we have enough money. But if there's any investment that this government is making, is in training. In fact, the amount of investment that government makes in training, the public service is unable to adequately utilize the investment made by government. To be more specific, in terms of basic education, that money is there. The workplace skills fund, we have that which we're using for training. So these programs, over and above other allocations, like a dedicated allocation for Funza Lushaka, there are funds that government makes available for us to train. At some point, I do get a sense that in some areas, the public service is maybe exhausted of training, because we've been training since 1994 in some areas, and we even reviewing whether we need to continue with the same training or not. But the point is, there are financial resources, Chair. Financial resources shouldn't be a worry for us. We should actually worry about the quality of programs and the impact of those programs more than any other thing. We take your advice. Involvement of experts and stakeholders in areas of disability, we do work with an organization representing the sector in South Africa, but you can broaden that to involve other organic experts. We work with universities and others, but it would be important also to work with people who've got the experience of working through some of the things that we are doing. People like Honorable Kikana will have to work closely with him to advise us on an ongoing basis. The other Honorable Co-Chair, Honorable Gina, for IOL and other interventions that you are making, like strengthening vocational education in the form of 3-stream, we are working with Higher Education and Training and HEIs. I must be woefully honest, it's not easy to work with universities, to cut through academic freedom and university autonomy. Dr. Blayton Zimande will tell you how challenging it is. It landed him in courts and so on. When in other countries, public universities are there to provide for public good. They are viewed as national assets. Maybe it's part of the development of our democracy. But increasingly, I see, consummate public servants like Dr. Witty Green and Mr. Kotsier navigating their way quite nicely in working with HEIs. I would have lost patience long time ago, to be quite honest, because especially with public universities. But I think they are doing quite well in getting these universities. And I must be woefully honest, they vary. Some of them, accept our proposals with open arms and are really moving in terms of what we have presented to you. I know, for instance, UJ and others, UJ meaning University of Johannesburg, have moved quite substantially in working with us, even in the area of ICT, in training teachers. The first group of some of the officials and teachers who have been trained on how to utilize ICT in teaching has been trained in UJ. We are integrating all of this, including IOL, Incremental Introduction of African Languages. It's a priority area for teacher education, which the team is factoring into their plans. ECD, I agree, including the comment made by Honorable Mbata and Honorable Van der Westhuizen, that we need to look at the cost of our teacher education. Some of it can be deflected, you know, to maybe institutions such as the TVET colleges. But truth be told also, at the moment, universities are perceived to be the only attractive post-schooling institutions. So we need to do a lot working with higher education and training, and they are doing quite a lot in making sure that we support TVET colleges to be almost at the same level as HEIs for attracting learners in our system. And part of the weaknesses that have been identified is that learners who are drawn from schools, particularly from grade 9, seem to be struggling with the curriculum that is offered at TVET colleges. Our view is that the cognitive level of that curriculum is extremely high. It might well be that it could actually be pitched for post-schooling. And that's why many learners are really struggling with it. The cognitive demand is extremely high. So distance learning and teacher education quality, the colleagues will speak to that. I know that, that is being addressed. In one of our head call meetings, we even agreed that there must be a move to say that for teacher education, it can't be, initial teacher education can't be distance learning. It's got to be, you know, if you like, face-to-face training and so on, given some of the quality issues that we came across. There is an agreement, Honorable Kina, in that respect. And is it Honorable Dirk? If I get it wrong, please pardon me. Dirk. Okay, thank you. Honorable Dirk, thank you for sharing your experience with us. For me, it's what makes us better if we get this kind of feedback. And as the Honorable Co-Chair indicated, there could be various things there. The teacher could be overwhelmed because of the absence of a socializing program in the form of induction. It could well be, we still get complaints even from old and experienced teachers of the administrative overload of assessment, which we've tried to reduce with the introduction of CAPS. So we are again doing something to try and reduce the administrative overload. So thank you very much. We'll take it back and just continue to make the environment conducive for teachers in the system. And then Honorable Killian, I'm just picking on a few, the colleagues will address the rest. Exposing students to more teaching practice. Yeah, some of what honorable members have shared with us is probably anecdotal evidence. But here is the empirical evidence. The empirical evidence, which is also supported by some of the recent studies such as SACMEC 4, it's a test which is conducted in 15 countries in SADC. Indicates that new entrants into the teaching profession seem to be very strong in subject content knowledge, but not so strong in the teaching methodology, in pedagogy. I don't think we are surprised about that finding. Universities, by their very nature, are very strong in knowledge creation and imparting knowledge and so on. But you wouldn't get the same level of exposure in teaching practice as you would have with teacher training colleges as they existed then. And I shared with the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education that in our visit to Zimbabwe last year with the minister, we discovered that the Zimbabweans were probably much wiser than we were in dealing with issues of teacher education, dealing with quality issues from historically teacher training colleges, vis-à-vis universities. The decision that they took, they merged teacher training colleges with universities so that you get the benefits of both. Because your teacher training colleges will be strong in your teaching practice, but not so strong in your subject content knowledge. And the subject content knowledge you will get from universities. So that's what Zimbabwe has done, and we thought that it was a wonderful experience for us as well going forward, because there is a move for some sectors of the system. We believe that colleges might be best suited to train some of our teachers. And we are working with higher education and training in that regard. A plan to focus on math and science, that's the strength of this presentation that we made to you. I mean, even for the foundation phase, for the first time we are saying teachers must focus on mathematics and languages, which was not there before. Historically, a teacher could be trained on any other thing except for mathematics and languages. And those are areas of focus. That's the NDP. The targets of the NDP are based on our performance. 60% of learners, 50% of learners performing above 60% in languages, mathematics, and science. So we factor that in the teacher training program as well. Reducing the cost of initial teacher education, I think this was raised by many honorable members. It's an issue that we'll definitely pay attention to and make sure that it's addressed. I've tried to address the notion of Honorable Mokoto, that a perception that Funza Lushaka teachers are not performing. One of the problems is, one, they were not properly inducted, they were not properly socialized into the system. Secondly, the research seemed to indicate that they are strong in subject content knowledge, and we are working with HEIs and universities to strengthen the teaching methodology. They are better than the old teachers in subject content knowledge, and I've explained the rationale behind that. Boosting the morale of teachers, we're really trying. The National Teaching Awards is our shining example. The neighboring countries have approached us. In fact, they said they want to use it in their countries as well. But we know that, you know, it, although all teachers are involved, it's only fewer teachers who benefit out of it. And we are looking at various things to, I mean, incentives for rural allowance is one of those. In some provinces it has worked, in others it has not worked so well. But we are implementing those incentives. But we have also started exchange programs with other countries. We've exposed officials. We now want to take it to teachers to help to increase their exposure, but also to motivate them so that they get to know that if you perform well, you stand a chance to be part of the exchange program as well. As somebody who's also trained in HR, I've learned that monetary incentives are not sustainable. They can help, but they are not really sustainable. Sustainable, especially in an economy as struggling as ours. So monetary incentives in the form of giving money, they are not always sustainable. But we're looking at other incentives that can really help to boost the morale. I'm raising this because Honorable Mokoto raised it and said, for instance, money. I don't even want to get into the discussion of saying, let's compare how our teachers are paid compared to teachers in the neighboring countries. If we don't pay our teachers better, why is it that we attract so many teachers from neighboring countries? But I'm leaving that.
Careful, DG. Wage negotiations is coming up.
That's actually the season now. Thank you, Chair, for your caution. It's an appropriate caution. Have we matched the quantity and the quality? And I think that's why the figures have been shared with the committee. That in the past we were just chasing the quantity. Now the shape, size, and substance. It's really about addressing those issues. The substance, to the best of my recollection, is the quality. So it's about completing the triangle. I'm told that a triangle is your strongest mathematical figure. For those who are acquainted with mathematical figures. And if you get it right, if you get the balance right, then the country will be on the right trajectory in delivering the education that would serve the nation. And then, Honorable Kikana, are we moving in the direction that the world is moving to? Indeed, but I must say it's a challenging pace to keep with. We have to deal with our backlog. As you would know that our teachers were trained to teach badly, generally, and not to offer education that would afford us, you know, competition with the rest of the world. At the same time, we have to factor in issues of the fourth industrial revolution, of deploying ICT into education, preparing our learners for the disruptive technology now and in future. We are also expected, it was part of the presentation, skills for a changing world. And now the world is actually saying the labor market is saturated. You need to train people who are coming to create jobs and not look for jobs. So more focus on vocational education and even entrepreneurship, which will help to bring people who create jobs than necessarily looking for jobs. We're also looking at online schools as part of your electronic training in the independent schools, private schools. There are some who are already offering education through online schools. So we're looking for that for public schools. We are working with them as well. So that we don't only look for four walls. And you are absolutely right. I mean, the capacity of the facilities that we have is such that they only take, by the way, between, at the most, 10 and 20% of learners that are produced from your schooling system. And the rest are just loitering, and actually admission is actually catering for learners who might have been produced by the schooling system 3, 5, or even 4 years ago. So we have to look for other ways of offering opportunities, and we'll continue to do that. Math, science, and accounting, scarce skills, has indicated that, well, to some extent, the program is catering for that. But I've also contributed to some of the weaknesses of learners who land with pivot colleges. Some of them are in the wrong place. In fact, our discussion with higher education and training is that we must move towards making pivot colleges post-schooling institutions. Post-schooling institutions. In fact, in terms of policy, they are even empowered to offer what could be offered by some of the HEIs. So we must look at that and make a clear distinction between schooling and post-schooling. I've spoken to the issue of colleges, the importance and the value that colleges can add, and your example is excellent. In the nursing profession, they add value. Colleges offer more practical experience than what HEIs will be able to do. Honorable Khosa, the movement of Funza Lushaka graduates from rural to urban areas. I thought you sketched the logic. One of the reasons that are given is that urban areas afford you better conditions of life. than in the rural area. And what you are trying to do to counter, you know, that phenomenon is the rural incentive that we are attaching to posts to attract some of these teachers. I know that it might not be adequate. We're looking at an inclusive package which could even include, you know, the facilities that are available for teachers in this area, like your teachers' quarters that are very decent, a conducive environment for teachers to make it more attractive. I think health tried that, and we're learning quite close from what health has done, and they've also warned us about their pitfalls, because in some areas they failed with their rural incentive. I also agree that although Dr. Green, I thought he said, is a pilot, the universities that are catering for inclusive education, but I'm sure you'll also accept that it's not feasible that we could have these universities in each of the provinces. It's not feasible. We have to cluster at least provinces and make sure that there's a fair spread across the country. Honorable Basson, I've tried to address the choice of universities for inclusive education. I know that you would have preferred that one should be at least in Upington, where you come from. And Honorable Mguni, I've tried to talk to the issue of the preference of other teachers over and above the Funza Lushaka teachers, and I've said it's more anecdotal than, but it is also an issue of attitude. In certain instances, from some people who cannot put up with the fact that some of these teachers are smarter than they are in subject content knowledge. It's essentially jealousy, if you but we've tried to address it. In all the meetings that we had with school principals, I challenged this fellow. And I said, yeah, the research says this. And what would you take between your anecdotal experience and the research? I think to some extent I persuaded them to really understand and take the facts more than the fallacy. Okay, the balance between the supply and the demand, I thought that's what we are trying to do. We are now saying that the shortages are more, I want to use the nomenclature used by Dr. Green. I've forgotten the nomenclature that he used. That they are more related maybe to subjects and geography. Used a very nice nomenclature, so I wanted to use it. It escaped me. I don't know why. Yeah, relative. Relative shortages than absolute. And I think we've gone past the notion of absolute shortages. They are now relative. They are related to certain subjects, geography, and so on. But I think that's the progress that this country has made. Thank you very much, Doc. I will acknowledge you throughout. Honorable Boshoff, I plan to address rural challenges. I've talked about rural incentives. I've also spoken to some of, you know, the interventions that we have in mind. And then transition from student to teaching. Your observation is also right. What has been the problem? It's been the induction. You also need people at school level who can handhold, so to speak, new entrants into the profession. Because induction is not once off. It's not a workshop. Induction is ongoing. It could actually be almost lifelong, because there are new things, there are new you know, experiences that people come across, and people who are more experienced need to hold your hand and take you through. That's part of the induction, and that's how we're inducted as teachers and even public servants, and we continue to be inducted. I've addressed the issue of the universities being in the north. We'll definitely address that. And Honorable, I think it's Honorable Ngwezi, if I'm not mistaken, the issue of the pilot in Gauteng, I've spoken to that. And the uniformity of content in the curriculum, that's what we are addressing. And we are saying going forward, we cannot claim that it has been fully addressed. We actually don't mind what the title says. We are more interested in the content. Whether you call it a module or a program, we're not worried. We want to know what is inside. What is it that is going to shape teachers who learn in the classroom? The supply and demand, I said that's what we have tried to address. The interviews that are conducted, Honorable Ngwezi, if you are spoiled for choice, how do you select? You know, if you don't have many teachers, as they come, they get into the classroom. You don't need an interview. But if you've got an avalanche, you subject them to a process where you can select. And I mean, provinces like Gauteng and Western Cape are always spoiled for choice for reasons that we all know. So they'll always have a mechanism such as an interview to select because they've got more teachers from which they have to select for various subjects. Yeah, Chair, maybe let me leave it there. And yeah, Honorable Van der Vest, there isn't the selection of Funza Lushaka is purely based on academic performance, no insight of what is involved in the profession. Maybe we'll have to strengthen that going forward and request that candidates must at least demonstrate interest by making some research of what is involved in the profession, so that it's not only based on academic performance. And I think to some extent, because countries like Finland, if I'm not mistaken, they've really profiled people that are attracted into the teaching profession. It is said that they attract the best. It's got to be a very high academic performance, but people who have interest, people who have made an effort to know about what is involved in the profession. Coaches, I'll leave the rest there. We've got a team of four people who are very capable. I just make sure that I'm not here at fruitless and wasteful expenditure.
Thank you very much for that, DG. You've been able to answer quite a lot of questions, if not all. Most. The one or two or three that has not been answered, may I ask you? Doesn't matter
what
to start.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to speak a little bit about the building on what my DG have shared around the selection of Funza Lushaka bursary holders. The process is not where it should be, but it is more than just within 24 hours you get your acceptance letters that you've been accepted. There is a selection committee that sits and considers every application. It consists of the university, Department of Basic Education, as well as the province, to make sure that the candidate meets the criteria as it stands for the bursary program. That process is very strongly linked to the registration processes of the university, because for us it's extremely important to ensure that when we fund a student, that student is indeed registered for the subjects and the phase that we are awarding the bursary for. So the selection process is a little bit more involved. We have and will in future place a larger emphasis as well on the issue of interest, of the reason why you want to become a teacher. That is definitely on our books, and we've already developed a draft guideline in that regard. Special needs, previously, Honorable Bosovic, previously Funza Lushaka didn't have a category for special needs. In other words, we're selecting you based on your subject offering that includes special needs. It is something that we are including at the moment. we must remember that Funza Vishaka funds the two entry paths into education, which is a Bachelor's of Education or a Postgraduate Certificate in Education. So what we're looking for is for a candidate to offer as part of those two programs specific areas. So for example, South African Sign Language as modules as part of that structure. And that will definitely become part of the priorities that we will then select basis on, or select people at that basis. As part of the application form, to include a question that says, do you have an interest in becoming a teacher in special needs or in that area? It is a recommendation that we will look at. I think it is worthwhile to include something like that in it as well as part of the application process. I'm a little bit concerned the statements around placement of 20% in the Eastern Cape, and because the reports that we've received from the Eastern Cape in terms of placement shows that by the end of September it stood at 84% placement. So there seems to be different reports that are floating around. It is something that we will have to look into to see how that is, how it came about. The DG spoke thoroughly about math and science. Funza Lishaka still has a preference for math and science, and I can also just indicate, for example, in 2017, we're looking at from grade 10 to 12 mathematics, 1,017 graduates that will graduate with mathematics funded by Funza Lushaka. For physical science, that figure is 821, and both those figures are up from 2016, which were for mathematics 632. And physical science is 390. So in terms of graduate output, we are starting to see the results of our focus on mathematics and science in our recruitment. And we are confident that in terms of math and science that we are making progress. The last point that I would like to make is around teacher education offered a distance education. Maybe just to mention to the committee that there's different options where distance education actually enables a quality teacher development process. So for example, we have two internship programs where students studying at UNISA are full-time based at a school while they complete their Bachelor's of Education or they complete their DGCE. Those two together really makes a difference in terms of the teacher training. And then also we have a project with teaching ambassadors where undergrads who graduate in mathematics and physical science are placed in school while they complete a PGCE, for example, and then they receive the mentoring that goes with that, and that we do with TeachSA. So I think there are models. If you link it with distance education, it can strengthen and enhance the quality. Thank you, Honourable Chair. That's where I will.
Thank you very much. Anything, Dr. Green?
Thank you, Chair. Maybe just to pick up where Gerard left off and to say, so you need this distance education model we have to interrogate, and we have to understand where the strengths and where the weaknesses are, and to take forward the areas that are strong. So, for example, with an example, Gerard said, it's also another example of we need to partner with senior colleges. So a number of senior colleges in the Western Cape, for example, in the delivery of the Bachelor of Education program. So it's not really a distance education program because there's strong support by the TV college for the students that are studying. So there are models that you can explore. I also want to assure the committee that the work around strengthening the visa is not waiting on the completion of the task team work. Work has started already around that. So, for example, UNISA is completely recalculating the program. UNISA has also, as part of the district teacher development centers, enhanced those centers so that they become regional sites. for supporting the students on teaching practice. And I want to assure the member that asked about distance education teaching practice. If the student is doing a distance education program, the teaching practice requirements are exactly the same as if they were doing a content program. So the same requirements in relation to time and content. There's not no difference in relation to that. I want to just pick up on a few things that I think haven't been highlighted. So the issue of ECCE, the TVET colleges offer a diploma, the national diploma in Educare, which is not a school teaching qualification, it's a qualification designed for the ECD context, the Virtual 4 context. Now there was a lot of miscommunication to students who came into the TVET program at some of the colleges that they would qualify as teachers on completion of that. Now we have corrected the misconception and we have communicated to the colleges and it's also national communicated gone out. That indicated that it was never ever recognized as a school teaching qualification. It was a teaching for the ECD context. But when the minister presented a policy in this atmosphere, one of the things he wrote in the policy before we were allowed to gazette it was that colleges must be involved in the delivery of the ECD qualifications. Now, the NBIT, the National Plan for PSET, that the Department of Education is finalizing, will include a move to enable TVET colleges to work beyond level 4. So they'll be able to work at level 5 and level 6. That will create the space for them to offer the qualifications in the policy. I didn't mention that in those 10 universities we are supporting, some TVET colleges are also involved in that partnership in order to inform, particularly those that were involved with UNISA around the delivery of the qualification. This issue of why UJ, why VIT, and why UP. So we engage with the Education Deans Forum. And we asked the Education Deans Forum, we indicated what we wanted to do, and we said, who would like to come on board with this, please provide a proposal. And those three universities, plus UNISA, provided a proposal. Now, why those three universities provided a proposal was because they already had emerging specialization in that area. So they weren't developing from scratch. So VIT had already started with the DEF focus. UP had already started, and UJ had already started. The UNISA Center is actually quite a strong center, already quite far ahead in its establishment. Because of our limited funding, we chose the other three, and we supported the other three. Now, the wording is very important here, because you could have called them centers of excellence, but you called them centers of specialization. And that's a signaling that we're starting a process towards getting them involved in this area of specialization with the view to them becoming centers of excellence. Now the sense of excellence notion in this country works on a hub and spoke model. That if you have a sense of excellence at a university, it's the kind of lead university that has the spoke. So that's where we want to get to. That these will eventually become the hub and they will be spokes in different provinces in relation to each of these areas of specialization. So there's a trajectory. And we're really only at the starting point in this. I think the last thing I wanted to indicate is the issue of African languages, because it didn't feature in our presentation. So we have established a Center for African Languages Teaching, linked to the University of Mpumalanga and the University of Johannesburg, which has a focus on isiSwati, isiNdebele, and isiZulu as three languages that those centers will seek to drive, seek to promote, seek to develop resources around. We are seeking to develop other centers in other areas. So, for example, at South Lake University, there's initial thoughts around the San and the Khoi languages and a sense of African languages teaching around those languages. And in the Western Cape, it's Xhosa. So, again, a kind of start of an idea that has to grow. And we're also looking to establish a chair, a Gaelic Sarki chair in African languages teaching. So I think we're putting our first steps on a trajectory towards kind of growing. So much work to do and still very much at the beginning. Thank you.
Thank you very much, honourable members. I would agree that they navigated very well through the 100 questions that were put to them, and that indeed they've covered all the questions that were put to them. Maybe thank the honourable members for their participation, the questions, and I'm sure the wise counsel that they have given to the departments of basic and higher education and training. May we take the opportunity to thank the other officials that came also to this meeting, and be happy that we will take on board some of the many suggestions that have been put, and we look forward to the next improved presentation to the committee so that we can see how well we are doing in moving forward in this very important area in the future of our young people in particular, and spending the money in such a way that the multiplier effects are reverberating out there in our communities. So thank you very much for all of that. I'm sure co-chair, all the pleasantries that you have received must be thanked from all the members, wishing you well and having you back again. The Portfolio Committee on Higher Education and Training, I'm afraid there is a meeting tomorrow. It will be in V227, in case you think that this is the only meeting for the week. And it follows very nicely on the presentation that we had from yourself, because we're dealing with the quality council tomorrow. So the majority of the things that you have said, we will look out in our presentations tomorrow on the nexus between this and the presentations tomorrow. So it fits very nicely, culture, in dealing with this today and having to deal with the cues, as I call them, councils tomorrow. Co-chair, shall I close the meeting?
Yeah, co-chair, thank you very much. But it's just one warning that I'm giving to you, higher education. Our matrics are starting their exams today, and we are promising you that there will be a stampede next year, because we are waiting for a very high pass rate, pass marker this year. So buckle up for what you are bringing to you in 2018. Otherwise, thank you very much, honourable members, and our colleagues from the
department. We receive that. That warning with the warmth that it has been given to us, and we promise you, Nessus is waiting for them. They are not filling in the forms. We will be very happy, basic education, if you can help us to talk to the young people to say you can't come February to apply and then say that all these things that you say. So thank you, basic education. Thank you very much, honourable members. I have no reason to keep you here any longer.
Why are you letting me all the time? When there's no reason to do so.